Welcome to the Larry Kreider's Leadership Podcast. Larry is the author of over 40 books, the founder of Dove International, a worldwide family of churches and ministries in six continents, and has over 50 years of leadership experience. He and his guests will share inspirational leadership insights from their journey with God. These insights, gleaned from serving leaders in many nations, will transform your life and leadership. For more information on Larry's books and resources, visit LarryKreider.com.
Welcome to the Larry Kreider Leadership Podcast. Larry Kreider here. So glad you've joined me today for this episode. Again, back by popular demand is Merle Shank.
Thanks for having me back, Larry.
I'm glad to have you back. We've been doing this together now various times, but I want to talk to you today about navigating team leadership, especially with you and Sri, because you're both anointed leaders called by God. Mm-hmm. So how does that work?
Well, for us, I mean, so everyone who is married, you know, you have this a similar dynamic, right, that happens. But
Right. For
Sri and I, like, we both love to achieve things. We both love to focus and get things done. And in our home, like, what we wind up doing is intentionally honoring each other. So that whole, like, culture of honor thing that, you know, is kind of popular out there right now. With Danny Silk and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we really use that internally, you know, so she is gifted and has strengths in areas that I am not. Mm-hmm. And the same for me.
Sure.
Right. And so actually saying, hey, God has called us to walk together, to accomplish great things together for our family, number one, you know, highest priority for each other and for our family and a relationship with the Lord, and then for ministry. Mm-hmm. And so how do we use our best gifts in that way? And so really knowing when to defer to one another. Mm-hmm. You know, knowing when to defer to say, hey, you're actually really gifted at this. And we have a lot of dialogues. Like, we wind up talking a lot, you know, about different things too. So keeping the communication lines open. But I would say, you know, really kind of intentionally maintaining that spirit of honor. You know, I mean, the Bible talks about marriage where we serve one another as a service to the Lord.
Right.
And so what that means to me and how I preach it is that we actually are called to treat one another not based on the way that the other person treats us, but based out of our service to the Lord and our heart for the Lord. So I love and honor and cherish my wife out of my service to the Lord.
Yeah.
Not based on how she treats me.
Yeah.
So whether it's a good day or a bad day, and she does the same for me, whether it's a good day or a bad day. So ultimately what happens is you wind up aiming to treat each other better than you deserve, right? Mm-hmm. Where we're not the judge of our spouse, we are the instrument of grace to them from God. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, ultimately, I think that can help pull things right, right? Like, even when things are kind of going south in a relationship is, and it's really hard to do sometimes, is to choose to treat the other person better than they deserve. Because you step out of the place of judge and you say, okay, God, this person is your son, your daughter. Right. And when you both are committed to that, you're both are committed to finding what each other is really gifted at, and then empowering that in one another.
It's good.
You know, you wind up working together in a very special and powerful way.
Yeah, the two of you do it so well. And Laverne and I are, you know, been involved in Christian leadership now for over 50 years.
Wow.
You know,
That's really, like, man, I feel like we should cheer or something. No, that's awesome.
You know, and really, she's my closest friend. I mean, and I had to learn that she had gifts that I simply didn't have. And then I had to release her to lead the way in that. And, you know, Priscilla and Aquila in the Bible are a good example of how that works.
Yeah.
It's really been a blessing. It's really been a joy to serve together.
And I think everyone who is married or anyone, really, because this, I mean, your marriage is your closest team, right?
That's right.
So
That's right.
Anyone who's working on a team, like, that's how, choosing to stay in a place of honor, even if you don't understand the other person, or even if there's an opportunity to misunderstand their motives or whatever, like, choosing to stay in that place of honor, saying, okay, I'm going to honor the gift of God within you. Help me understand what's happening here.
Yeah.
When things are hard, or like pulling together, saying, man, you got this corner, I got this corner, let's go.
Right. Exactly. You know, so. Exactly. Next question I have for you is, you know, you've been involved in ministry now for many years. What are things you wish you would have known when you started?
Well, so kind of tied to what we just talked about is the role of, I mean, there's a lot of, out there about emotional intelligence right now.
Yeah.
And that's very important.
It is.
I think specifically how that ties to relationships. So I want to call it relational intelligence.
I like that.
I don't know if that's a term out there or not.
Maybe that's your next book.
Probably is. I don't know. You know, but I think the value of that in leadership and in working with people, because so many times people are taken out by the lies of the devil. I've seen people, you know, almost, you know, come to the brink of breakthrough and then give up, or seen people like come to the brink of, man, if they really put the time in to sort this out and figure out what's going on, this is going to really shift their lives. And they bail, right? And I've done that. I mean, I think we've all done that, right? Like there's this places where we've just given up or whatever. But I think, you know, the understanding the relational intelligence piece where, you know, when we are called to walk with God, we're called to walk with other people as well.
Correct.
And a commitment to figuring that out with other people, I think, is really important. I wish I would have known that. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have understood that. So there's been a lot of great resources that God has used.
Right,
you know,
right.
Myla, Danny Silk, Keep Your Love On, Crucial Conversations,
right?
It's a great book out there.
Yeah, it's a great book.
You know, just talks about how to dialogue through disagreements.
Right.
And really recognizing that, like, you know, I think it was in that book, Crucial Conversations, that really kind of opened my eyes to this, that nobody else can make you mad. Or maybe it was Danny Silk. I forget who it was. Nobody else can make you mad. You're actually angered by your interpretation of their motives.
Yeah.
So when something happens, instantly you assign a motive to it.
Yeah.
And that is actually what you're angry at. And I was like, well, I'm not sure. I've had a lot of people who made me mad. You know, I'm not sure if I really believe that. But then after thinking about it, I'm like, okay, so if, and I use this illustration sometimes when I'm preaching, or like I have somebody stand up and be like, okay, pretend, you know, so Larry, pretend you're standing on the street corner and I come running up behind you and I knock you into the street, bump you into the street. Like, you're like, what? What's going on? Right? Immediately. Like, you get angry. You get, I mean, I would, and maybe not you, but I would, you know,
would
like,
too.
You know, or somebody cuts you off in traffic and just, you know, floors right in front of you and cuts you off and you have to slam on your brakes or whatever. And immediately you're upset, like you're angry. And then what happens is, you know, you knocked in the street, you run around the corner and there you see me getting my children out of a burning building.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you're not angry anymore. But what changed? The facts didn't change. You were still knocked into the street. It's your understanding of my motive changed.
Yeah.
And so many times I think what winds up hindering people the most is we assume the motive of other people on our teams, other leaders. There's a saying, and I don't know who said it. I'm terrible at remembering who said what, but like there's this saying that says we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are. And I think, you know, because we see through lens of disappointment or lens of previous pain or previous experiences or, you know, all of these things. And the thing is, like, you can say, well, Merle, this isn't really spiritual things. This is all just psychology. It's true. It is. But that's where the warfare happens.
Right.
Like the warfare that Satan comes against people with is in their mind.
Correct.
And so, and if Satan can, and this is what he did with Eve, right? Like he comes to Eve and says, did God really say, don't eat of the tree of garden, right? Or trees in the garden.
Right.
And just enough truth in there to make the lie believable. And then he says, the next step is he says, well, you know, God knows that if you eat of this, you're going to become like him.
Right.
And so she has this thing like, oh, I'm fearing missing out. Like God's holding out on me something now. Maybe he's not as good as he was.
Good.
And that's what the enemy does is he comes and he tries to change the narrative of our hearts about somebody or about God, about another person or about our job or about like our boss or about our spouse. He changes the narrative of the heart. And that's what happens that over time, the enemy will actually court that narrative, that negative narrative in our minds. So be like, see, you know, and then anything that happens that could somehow be understood to be in alignment with that narrative, there's this reinforcement of like, see, you're not as good as you thought you were, or see, you know, they don't like you as much, or, you know, whatever that narrative is, because his goal is to drive you away from people and drive you away from God. And so that happens so many times. And understanding how how the enemy has tried, or he uses that to try and bring separation and bring division mm-hmm. and bring strife, mm-hmm. you know? I think I wish I would have known that
yeah.
on the front end. Man, there could have been a lot of, not that you can avoid every pain or anything like that, but I mean, there was times there's times I think back in my own life, right? Like, you know, something happens and you're like, that was weird, right? Like yeah, you have this yeah, interaction yeah. with somebody and you're like, that was weird. And then you go to bed, right?
Yeah.
And you're laying there thinking about it. And like, every time you think about it, it just gets a little worse, a little worse, a little worse, a little worse, a little worse. Yep. And by the next morning, this person is an absolute villain,
right,
and you
right.
or you are a total victim, you know, right. and there's nothing you could have done or whatever. And like we like to tell ourselves, I think Crucial Conversations talks about that, like victim and villain stories. Mm-hmm. And all that does is removes responsibility from us.
That's right.
And our part, you know, that yeah. we have in the conversation.
Yeah.
And so like, but that whole thing, that tendency to like go from like, that was weird to now this person is an absolute victim or a villain. Sorry. You know, that whole inner dialogue is a picture of the courting of the enemy.
Yeah.
Like just sits on the sideline and, right. and puts his two cents in just to try and like nudge you away from each other. And I think this happens in marriage. I think yeah. this happens in leadership. Yes. You know, this happens whenever there's misunderstanding, we wind up trying to judge people's motives mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. opposed to just observing facts. Like, mm-hmm. hey, this happened. And so like the healthy way is to go and say, when you said this, what did you mean? Mm-hmm. And you allow somebody else to define their motive, right?
Right.
I think, you know, that was something I wish, you know, I would have known a long time ago. And then also from a leadership perspective is always define your motives. Because mm-hmm. if you don't assign a motive to what you are doing, mm-hmm. other people will assign a motive to what mm. you're doing. And the enemy will many times try and use that to get them to separate from you.
Right.
So it's important that you define why you're doing what you're doing. And that that can actually avoid some levels of offense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so sometimes, you know, people come in and they've just been beaten up by life
sure.
before, and they have these lenses that they see the world through. And they're just never going to trust leaders, or never going to trust anything that's bigger than them, or never going to trust anything that they're not leading or whatever. And it's just, you know, sometimes you just got to, like, well, that's where they're at. You know,
right.
we're going to love them anyway.
Exactly.
But like, you know, it's hard to see yeah. somebody get chewed up by the enemy like that. So,
yeah.
I, you know, that whole relational intelligence,
good.
I think the importance of that mm-hmm. is super huge
yes,
in the kingdom of God and yeah. teamwork, and especially in,
of course,
you know, as a Dove International, how we like to work with leaders in mm-hmm. relationships, and we mm-hmm. we believe in a relational Christianity,
we do.
And spiritual fathers and sons and daughters
yep.
and mothers,
exactly.
you know, like
exactly.
all that kind of experiences.
I learned
church.
Something in New Zealand many years ago through Jen Dawson, and it has to do with this just a bit. And he said, what often happens is someone will do something to us maybe 10 years ago or 20 years ago, or someone did something wrong, and we judge them as if it happened yesterday, happened 20 years ago or 30
yeah.
years ago or
yeah.
15 years ago. He said, how do we know that God hasn't changed them and changed their hearts and, you know,
right.
and here we're still carrying that thing from way back there.
Yeah.
So, but you're right. Relational intelligence is a big, big deal. Talk about guarding your heart.
Yeah. So part of that too, I think, you know, guarding our hearts, the Bible tells us in Proverbs to guard our hearts because out from it flows the wellspring of life. I think
right.
that's in Proverbs 4.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's things that we have, you know, John 7, verse 38, Jesus says that out of your bellies will flow rivers
right.
of living water, right.
right?
And I think, you know, so we have this promise from God that we have a wellspring of life in our heart. We have the promise that out of our bellies will flow rivers of living water from Jesus.
Mm.
Of course, he's talking about the Holy Spirit. But my, you know, we need to guard our hearts because we don't want that well to be tainted.
That's good.
You know, like we can allow that well to be tainted by disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
We can allow that well to be tainted by like mistrust of
mm-hmm.
other people
mm-hmm.
or, you know, judging their motives or whatever,
right,
you
right.
know? And there's certain things that like, even if it's true, we probably shouldn't give our hearts to it.
Right.
Right. Like you can find, you know, tons of stuff online,
yeah,
on the internet,
exactly.
right? Like you can find tons of stuff
yeah.
of people who failed, moral failure and all
yeah.
these kind of things. But does that make me a better person?
Mm.
Does that make me does the taste, the streams of water that's coming out of my life by giving myself to those negative things and those mm-hmm. negative narratives, right? Because that's mm-hmm. really what we're talking about. Like the yeah. enemy tries to build these narratives yeah. to your yeah. life. And I think God will come and I feel like this is for somebody maybe even listening to the podcast, that God will come and he's going to actually sit you down and you realize, sorry, I'm just going to do this. This is something I feel like God wants to do for somebody listening. Is he's actually, you recognize you've been caught up in this in victim and villain stories, and you recognize that this has been like a common denominator in relationships in your life. Mm. And there's this whole negative narrative over yourself and negative narrative over your life where you've believed lies of the enemy and the enemy has brought narratives to you. I feel like the Lord wants to sit you down mm-hmm. and just narrate your life back to you from his perspective.
Wow.
And allow almost like a redefinition of your story. So this isn't for you, Larry. This is something I'm looking at you, but like this, I feel like the Lord wants to do that for somebody here. And so almost like redefine your life and re-narrate your life back to you. And so that's, yeah. Anyway, just wanted to pause.
All those listening, if that's for you, take it as your own.
Yeah. So back to guarding our heart, you know, there are certain things that we shouldn't give ourselves to, and we need to know, and know how to recognize and have enough emotional intelligence about ourselves to like, what is this doing to me? Mm-hmm. What is buying into this story? What is buying into this narrative, this negative thing actually doing to me? Is it drawing me closer to Jesus? Mm-hmm. Now, listen, we don't bury our head in the sand. I'm not talking about burying our head in the sand, you know, about negative things that can happen out there. Like, no, we need to be wise. You know, mm-hmm. but I'm talking about like getting caught up in the drama of it all, right? And the feeding frenzy that can happen, mm-hmm. especially on social media and stuff. Like when you get caught up in it, like, is that drawing you closer to the Lord? Is that drawing you closer? Is that making you a better believer, right? And so just checking your heart and guarding mm-hmm. it with all diligence, right? So Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 says, keep your heart with all diligence. Mm. The ESV says, with all vigilance. Mm. Vigilance, not vigilance. Sorry.
Well, that's a new word.
Yeah. With all vigilance. In those days, like the gatekeeper, if he didn't do his job, he would lose his life.
Correct.
And so the writer of Proverbs is saying, listen, do this as if your life depends upon it, because it does, right? So like mm-hmm. we need to guard our hearts as if our very life depends upon it, because it really does. It really does. Yeah. So it's really key for us as leaders and for everyone.
I have a couple more questions for you today. Mm-hmm. Something that's kind of close to this I want to talk to you about is burnout. Mm-hmm. I know you've gone through some semi-burnout in your own mm-hmm. life. I've gone through some in my life. How do you avoid burnout?
So for me, I was doing a ton. I didn't have healthy boundaries, number one, in my life. And I was just at the beck and call of whatever problems would come up. You know, I was at, you know, whatever needed to happen, I was there, I would do it. And eventually, like, I just fried. Like, mm-hmm. I just, you know, I was leading. This was really kind of before I learned how to build buy-in, before I learned how to cast vision and get people to fully buy into that as well. I thought that if I would just model it, if I just model what I wanted, it would be enough. No, mm-hmm. I actually needed to explain it. I actually needed to teach. I actually needed to bring somebody along and coach and mentor and not just model it mm-hmm. quietly, hoping that everyone else would pick it up. Because what happens as a leader, if you think that you're just going to model it and people will eventually pick it up, is people will just let you do it.
Right. Exactly.
You know? And so like, I mean, I remember I was leading 7 small groups a week. You know, at one point.
Every time you say that, it freaks me out. You do that.
And preaching and like leading and you know, doing prayer.
You were
prayer
on the road to burnout doing that.
And, you know, and helping the worship team. And I was on the worship. You know, there's this season where we just did everything. And honestly, church planning, if, you know, shout out to all my church planners out there, right? Yes. Like you do it, right? Like there's this season where you do everything. You're preaching the most amazing message and you're taking the trash out, right? Like, and you're paying the rent and you're tearing down all the chairs and setting up all the sound. All that kind of stuff. And so like there's this time where you do stuff, but I didn't know how to delegate and I didn't know how to like give away things, and I thought if I just modeled it, people would get it, and they weren't. Mm-hmm. And so that disappointment almost crushed me, right? Mm-hmm. Like when I would go to hand over a small group, like I try and bring the leader along and then like hand it over to them, and like 4 weeks later it would stop, it would shut down, like, yeah. And they wouldn't want to do it. I was so frustrated.
Yeah.
And in that place of all of this, I didn't realize that, well, all of this was draining me. Mm-hmm. And I heard a message, and I wish I could remember the guy's name. It was online, but it was like a godsend resource for me, mm-hmm. where he talked about like that each one of us are a vessel, and we have things that fill us and we have mm-hmm. things that drain us. And there's levels of burnout, and you know, there's emotional burnout,
right.
You know, there's mental burnout, right. There's physical burnout. Mm-hmm. And I think the first one is mental burnout, then emotional burnout, then physical. But you know, mental is like you're frustrated, you're angry, you know, the punishment doesn't fit the crime, you're blown up at your kids, whatever. Right. Because of frustrations that are happening. The second one is emotional. You just have an emotional breakdown. Mm-hmm. Like you can't handle life anymore because you're just getting so drained and so drained. And then the last one is physical burnout, where you wind up in the hospital and they can't tell you what's wrong with you, right. But you just can't move, right? Or whatever, right. Like your body's not functioning well any longer. And that's all part of like, you know, just getting drained and drained and drained and drained. And we can never disassociate ourselves from things that drain mm-hmm. us. Like that's just life. Especially in leadership, right. Like there's always things that will drain you, but doing enough of what fills you is mm-hmm. the key.
Yeah.
And so knowing who God has called you to be, how you restore what you need to really fill yourself back up again. So I love, you know, I'm a country boy. I love being out in nature. I do things that have to do with that, you know, hunt, fish, you know, go out and like just be out in nature. That fills my tank. That fills me back emotionally, right? And so what happens though is, so we can know that about ourselves, but if we don't intentionally schedule what fills us, everything that drains us will ultimately just creep in.
Right.
And so I've had to learn for myself is to schedule my downtimes, mm-hmm. which sounds crazy because normally we schedule our work, right? We schedule everything that happens, but actually scheduling our downtimes on a weekly basis and then defending it mm-hmm. so that we can get filled back up, mm-hmm. you know, because what happens is you wind up sacrificing the things that fill you. You know, it's like, you know, like, oh, we don't have time to go out on a date tonight. Like, or I'm so exhausted. I don't have time to go out on a date tonight. That date would help refuel me. It would help refuel my spouse, and our marriage.
Right.
But we're so fried, we can't do it. And so what, you know, and then, oh, I can't go for that mile run, or I can't go for that walk, or I can't take my kids to do this, or I can't just go and do that because I'm so tired, or I have so many other things I have to do. Mm-hmm. What happens is because we don't prioritize the things that fill us, we wind up sacrificing those things.
Right.
And then we wind up living drained.
Yeah.
You do that for long enough and you burn out.
Yeah.
So for me, just having to learning how to schedule the things and then defend them, like just unashamedly be like, yeah, I'm sorry. I can't be here to deal with this challenge or this crisis or this decision that needs made. I am over here and unashamedly I'm out in the woods, right? Yeah, like, or something, you know, and just being okay with that.
Right.
And I think ministers, you know, sometimes we have that Christ complex. Yeah. I think I've heard you speak about, you know, where we think
the Messiah complex, the Messiah, we got to fix everybody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, where we're going to be the next person on the cross, you know, and Jesus doesn't give his glory to anybody. He'll let you fry.
Right.
If you don't watch that.
Yeah. And I'm with you. My hat goes off to people starting churches, church planters, knowing that it is hard, starting new ministries, starting new businesses. It is hard. Yeah. But I think often we make the mistake of not building a team first. If we can build a bit of a team first, then we can have someone to cover for us when we go do the things that fill us. Mm-hmm. And I think often in talking to church planters and others, they're so excited by going and doing it, they go out and jump in with both feet without having a bit of a team to help them.
So I love those kind of people.
Yeah. I know, I'm with you. Last thing I want to ask you is talk yet about quickly about buy-in. How do you get buy-in?
Yeah, so this was something that I had to learn. And so I just have to say, you know, like I'm talking as if I'm like this amazing professional sitting here and I've learned all these stories. Life is learning.
Right.
Right. So exactly. Like there's things I'm learning right now, right? Like there's no, you never stop learning. Right.
Right. Right.
But some things that I've learned on the journey, one of those is knowing how to build buy-in. And I used to think that agreement was buy-in.
Yeah.
So when I would cast a vision and say, hey, let's go do this thing. And people would say, yes, you know, I said, are you behind us? Yes, we're behind you. You know, and then like you go and out and you do it and you turn around and they're behind you. They're way behind you, you know? but I had to come to this place of saying, okay, well, what is buy-in? Well, buy-in is ownership.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that like the most elite fighting forces in the earth use is that everybody has ownership. Like, right. Like, yes, there is a chain of command, but everyone has ownership. Mm-hmm. And like, this is our mission. This is what we're doing. And so anything to build that level of ownership in the lives of people.
Right.
So, hey, we want to do this thing. We feel like God's calling us to do this, or we have a ministry department in our church, you know, like, let's make it practical to leading church. You know, we're going to do this outreach or we're going to do this ministry department. How do you see this happening? So I have a vision for it and I need to be clear about that vision, but then I can't just hand that to people.
Right.
It needs to be, what do you see? What do you want to add to this? How do you know, what am I missing? And when people are able to give into the direction of something, when they feel they have a slice of the ownership of that, then that starts to be buy-in. And you know you have buy-in when people start to talk about visions as if it's their own.
Their own, yeah.
And
you're
like, you know, you have to keep yourself from saying like, I'm pretty sure I talked to you like 6 months about that. You know, like, you know, because sometimes we don't try and own it or whatever.
Right.
No, like the thing is when they start to share it as if they're the one who came up with it, you know, then you know you have buy-in and people are on board.
Merle Shank, this is so, so, so good. I want to have you back in the future, probably after you're the international director of Dove International, and we can talk about what did that whole transition look like and how you're doing, and that'll be great. We'll talk more about that.
I want to write a book with you about it, Larry.
We're going to do it. We're going to do it. We'll wait till about a year out and see all the blessing of God, and then we'll write a book on it. Yep. I'd love to do that.
Sounds good.
I have many people ask if we do that. And for all of you listening today, Merle's book, Encountering the Supernatural, where he's co-authored this with our mutual friend Kevin Kazemi, and yours truly, Larry Kreider, Discover God's Amazing Presence and Power for Your Life, a great book on the supernatural, how that each of us can personally walk in the supernatural. And we're so glad you've joined us today. If you want to learn more about Merle, more about the things that God has called him to do, check out the show notes. Check out the show notes for Encountering the Supernatural and get that any place you buy books. And we're so glad you've joined us today. Again, the Larry Kreider Leadership Podcast, where we find these small changes we can make in our lives that will make a massive difference, not only in our lives, but the lives of those we serve and they serve from generation to generation. God bless you. See you back here next week.
Thank you for listening to Larry Kreider's Leadership Podcast. If you want more information about any of Larry's books, daily devotionals, small group resources, or any other teachings, go to LarryKreider.com.